Welcome back. Last time, I talked about archaeological understandings of some of the characteristics of Minoan civilization. And this involved particularly our interpretation of the palace system that we find on Crete. The roles of these palaces, which, despite the term, seem to have had a whole variety of different functions: administrative, communal, storage functions, manufacturing functions, ritual functions. They were real multi-purpose structures. I also spoke about the relative lack of evidence for warfare in Minoan society, which is very interesting, given, for example, our experience with other societies in the Near East, Egypt, Mesopotamia, and even the contrast with Mycenaean society on the Greek mainland. Crete may have been internally, at least in relative terms, quite peaceful under the Minoans, but that did not exempt the island from either natural disasters or foreign invasion. As I noted in the last lecture, the proto-palatial period is separated from the neo-palatial period by an episode of palace destruction at about 1750 BC. So we had the initial period of palace building before 1750 BC, then this period of destruction, and then a period of renewal of the palace system on Minoan Crete. This period of destruction may well have been the result of an earthquake. Far better known and much more extensively debated is the volcanic eruption on the island of Thera, or Santorini, which lies about 100 kilometers, or approximately 70 miles, to the north of Crete. The Thera eruption actually contributed a great deal to archaeological knowledge of Minoan civilization, as it entombed the town of Akrotiri, a Minoan community, under many meters of ash and other volcanic debris. This burial, akin to the entombment of the Roman town of Pompeii, led to a remarkable preservation of archaeological features on the site. And one of the features most striking at Akrotiri are the frescoes on the walls of buildings, which are really extraordinarily beautiful and give us a feeling of the vibrance of Minoan society. This is one of those many cases where archaeologists would love to have this sort of information for all of the archaeological sites that we excavate. We have to consider that the sites where we, as usual, excavate after thousands of years, perhaps walls of mud brick or of stone, we have to remember that in ancient times, those wouldn't have been the blank and rather battered surfaces that we see today, but probably covered with imagery. So at Akrotiri, we actually have the possibility of seeing the sorts of beautiful paintings that Minoan people would have lived their lives among, preserved almost as well as when they were new. Akrotiri was either a Minoan colony or a Cycladic settlement, a pre-existing settlement that had absorbed a great deal of Minoan culture. And in a sense, it really doesn't matter. It was very much, at this point, a Minoan cultural community. The Thera eruption was probably 4 to 5 times as great as that of Mount Krakatoa in Indonesia in 1883. With more than 20 cubic miles of material ejected, this vast amount of rock and ash and magma ejected into the stratosphere. The layer of ash and rock on the island itself, on Thera itself, is in some places 60 meters, or almost 200 feet thick. The eruption devastated Thera. One of the interesting things is that there seems to have been enough probably from small-scale earlier eruptions, there seems to have been enough time so that the people were actually able to escape. We have no bodies at Akrotiri, as we did, for example, at Pompeii. The question, though, is what effect did this have on Crete and the other islands of the Mediterranean? Answering this question is made difficult because of a fascinating conflict between different kinds of data. Essentially, researchers get different dates for the Thera eruption based on whether they use radiocarbon dating of organic materials on Thera at the time of the eruption, for example, olive wood at the bottom, at the base of the ash and rock levels that date to the eruption. Radiocarbon dating gives dates for the eruption between about 1630 and 1600 BC. That's about as precise as we can get. On the other hand, historically dated artifacts, particularly ceramics recovered from the last occupations of Akrotiri, yield dates of about a century later. This kind of conflict between different sorts of dating techniques is much more common than non-archaeologists might think, and probably has a variety of different sources, perhaps inaccuracies in the historical dating of pottery, for example, or contamination of radiocarbon samples. Obviously, this is important in gauging the effects of the eruption. We would prefer to have a precise and universally agreed upon set of dates for the eruption, because we want to examine contemporary levels on Minoan and other archaeological sites in the eastern Mediterranean to see what effect this extraordinarily powerful volcanic eruption might have had. For what it's worth, there's a disruption of growth rings in North American and European trees that might be due to the climatic effects of the Thera eruption. And those are dated to 1627 or 1628 BC, which would imply that the radiocarbon dates are correct. And we know from historical volcanic eruptions of this magnitude that throwing this much solid material into the atmosphere can result in dust clouds that lower temperatures and disrupt weather patterns worldwide. The primary effect of the eruption was probably a violent tsunami, a tidal wave, which would have devastated harbors and towns on Crete's north coast, including the harbor of Knossos, and any ships lying close to the shore. This tidal wave would probably have been 10 to 12 meters or 32 to 38 feet high when it reached the Cretan coast, a really significant tsunami. If the Thera eruption is dated to just before 1600 BC, Minoan culture and governance seem to have survived its impact for about another century. Around 1500 BC, and that is, if you remember, about the time that we see that the historical ceramics seem to date the eruption, Crete appears to enter into a period of great political and social turmoil. One that lasted perhaps 50 years and that marks the end of the Neopalatial period and really marks the end of the palace system on Crete as a whole, with one exception I'll come to in a moment. During this time, around 1500 BC then, a number of the palaces were destroyed. And in fact, there's evidence of burning and destruction on a whole variety of Minoan sites, from the largest to some quite small and even isolated, in a few instances, rural communities. That exception is the palace at Knossos itself. The palace at Knossos was not destroyed. In fact, its use and size seem to have expanded somewhat over this period. The time between about 1450 BC and 1200 BC is called the post-palatial period on Crete. So we've seen the destruction at this point of the palace system across the entire island. There have been a number of different explanations that archaeologists and historians have given for this period of destruction around 1500 BC. It actually runs from approximately 1500 to 1450 BC. One thing we can say archaeologically is that it seems to have involved a significant increase in Mycenaean influence from mainland Greece. So I've spoke up to this point about Minoan culture and Mycenaean culture. Minoan culture develops earlier, develops in a rather different direction. In the first half of the second millennium BC, Mycenaean culture is developing on the Greek mainland. In the post-palatial period on Crete itself then, after 1450 BC, Minoan culture seems to disappear, or at least in its elite form seems to disappear, and is replaced by increasing evidence for Mycenaean influence. There's a number of reasons for linking this destruction episode at approximately 1500 BC and the subsequent domination of Crete to the Mycenaeans. There's specific data we have on this topic. After 1450 BC, we find Linear B writing on the Mycenaean sites on mainland Greece and also on Crete. Linear B, I've spoken about it before, an archaic form of Greek written using the same characters as Linear A, seems to be to some degree developed under the inspiration of Linear A, associated with Mycenaean sites, but now it appears as well on Crete. So we have written indications of Mycenaean influence and Mycenaean activities on Crete. We also have a set of rich warrior graves around the Knossos Palace. And these graves have yielded artifacts, particularly weapons, that closely resemble those from mainland Mycenaean sites. Another set of data. And finally, ceramic and art styles on Crete after about 1500 BC tend to more closely resemble those on the mainland. So fairly good evidence in many ways for, at the very least, increasing Mycenaean influence on the island of Crete during the post-palatial period. The question is, as usual, exactly what form did this Mycenaean influence take? These data have often been interpreted as indicating the takeover of the pre-existing Minoan political system by Mycenaean overlords in the period between about 1500 and 1450 BC, and the continued rule of Crete by these Mycenaean overlords for the next three centuries. So there would be an invasion at 1500 BC or just after 1500 BC, a violent invasion, the destruction of much of the palace system, and the takeover by Mycenaean rulers. Under these circumstances, then, the expansion of the palace at Knossos, just that one palace, would be presumably the takeover of that singular palace by rulers of the entire island of Crete, Mycenaean rulers. There are some objections to this hypothesis. Some archaeologists see a degree of architectural and cultural continuity on Crete before and after 1500 BC, especially in grave styles. Of course, it's not at all unlikely that that some degree of cultural continuity is going to exist. There's no particular evidence that there was a complete erasure of the Cretan population at 1500 BC. The evidence of destruction we have is architectural, centered on the palaces, widespread certainly. But we may well still expect to see some degree of cultural continuity. Interestingly enough, comparisons of strontium isotopes in skeletons from Cretan burials of the period, including the warrior graves, comparison of those strontium isotopes with graves on the mainland indicates that the people buried in Crete, including those buried in the warrior graves, were born and raised on the island. Again, that is not really, from my point of view anyway, an argument necessarily against a Mycenaean invasion. It would simply mean that these overlords, Mycenaean overlords, were born, raised families on the island itself, on Crete. An alternative explanation would be that the destruction visited on Minoan sites after 1500 BC had an internal origin, but we have to note it would appear in that case an origin heavily influenced by mainland Mycenaean culture. It's likely that this period saw a centralized administration centered on Knossos and extending over much, if not all, of Crete at the time, but with many of the economic roles of the palaces, in this case actually the palace at Knossos, retained. There are linear B references, written references, to a wanax, or ruler, and probably to names of his subordinates. But it's not clear exactly what this role of wanax, or ruler, actually entailed. The disruptions at the beginning of the post-palatial period are dwarfed by the events of some centuries later. In the 13th and 12th centuries BC, Mycenaean sites on the Greek mainland and post-palatial sites on Crete itself suffered extensive destruction, and the cultural unity of Mycenaean civilization seems to fall apart over a period of about a century. And this takes a whole variety of different forms. Mycenaean and Cretan post-palatial political centers were abandoned. And all through this area, on the mainland and on the Greek islands and on Crete, large-scale architecture becomes far more rare. There's very extensive and nearly simultaneous evidence of destruction on sites throughout this part of the Eastern Mediterranean. When I say simultaneous, I mean simultaneous to the extent that archaeological research can tease out the timing of these events. Within a century or so, this destruction seems to have happened on a variety of sites. There's significant change in ceramic and other artifact styles. And the art of writing was lost by the 12th century BC and would not be rediscovered or readopted in Greece until the 8th century BC. The sophisticated Minoan and Mycenaean art styles vanish as well, probably with the end of a vigorous elite culture in the region. Trading routes collapse. Most of the mainland, Cretan, and island communities over the next four centuries would exist to a great degree isolated from those widespread networks of economic and political and cultural interchange that had existed in earlier times. There's general evidence for population declines across the whole region over this period. So this set of disruptions, culminating in the 12th century BC, ushered in the so-called Greek Dark Ages, which would last until approximately 750 BC. These are the archaeological signatures of a pretty classic collapse of a civilization. And as such, they're of great interest to archaeologists trying to understand state development in different regions. I haven't talked about this issue to a great extent before, but I will be continuing to come back to it in later lectures. It's obviously a question of great interest. In our imaginings, in our cultural imaginings, the rise of great empires, of vibrant civilizations, is closely associated with their collapse. As a part of the natural order of things, because of the hubris of rulers and nobles. But one of the things that archaeologists have to wonder, we have to ask ourselves, is this actually a good way of understanding political and cultural and social processes in ancient times? What exactly does collapse mean? Both in the Eastern Mediterranean case and more generally in those other societies that we're going to look at where similar kinds of events seem to have happened. The nature of the Minoan and Mycenaean collapse, the nature of this set of events is much debated among archaeologists. We ask ourselves, did it involve migrations and invasion by the ancestors of the Dorian and Ionian Greeks? This was, for a long time, a popular explanation for the end of Minoan and Mycenaean civilization, particularly Mycenaean civilization. Did it involve changes in the nature of warfare during this period, perhaps more effective mass warfare than had existed in earlier times? Did it involve internal revolt? Perhaps common populations deciding that their overlords were too harsh, were expecting too much of them, and a revolution or a rebellion? Was it due to some disruption of the economies or trading systems of these Mycenaean political centers? Did it involve environmental change? Or perhaps some combination of some or all of these factors? And it's likely, in fact, that the last of these suggestions, that there's a number of things happening in combination, is most realistic. There's limited evidence for population movements in the Eastern Mediterranean in the 13th and 12th centuries BC, some of which, judging from the ceramic styles, may involve people from beyond the region. But these are not the massed barbarian Dorian invasions of the Victorian imagination. The Victorians held that the ancestors of modern Greeks had swept into the region from elsewhere. The origins of those people was often a little unclear, but they toppled the Mycenaean states. Similarly, there isn't really enough evidence to support any one of these theories as accounting for all of the disruption that took place in the 13th and 12th centuries BC. One thing that should be kept in mind is that disruptions in this period were not limited to mainland Greece and Crete. The Hittite kingdom in Anatolia, in modern Turkey, fell at about the same time. And indeed, there's evidence of social and cultural and political dislocations all around the Eastern Mediterranean. So this collapse of Mycenaean culture is part of a wider set of events that seems to have taken in a much larger area. Archaeologists debate a number of questions concerning these dark ages. First, how dark were they really? There's scattered evidence that some communities, like Mitru on the coast of central Greece retained their continuity through this period of disruption and destruction. It was not absolutely general, this set of events. Some communities seem to have more or less escaped it. The extraordinary Lefkandi burial site to the south of Mitru is dated to about 1000 BC. It includes two extremely rich burials in a monumental building, 45 meters or 145 feet long, in an architectural style having nothing to do with early Mycenaean models. There's a cultural rupture here, it appears, between the earlier Mycenaean architecture and that displayed at Lefkandi. Lefkandi shows that there were pockets of wealth and cultural dynamism in Greece during this period, during the Dark Ages. But they do not seem to have persisted. To some degree, the concept of Dark Ages is overdone. It typically concentrates on the evidence for elite and urban collapse, with less attention paid to whether ordinary people, especially in rural areas, would have been very much affected by what happened to their overlords. Nevertheless, there's a great deal of evidence in the Eastern Mediterranean during this time period for real, widespread, and often violent processes of political and social disruption. The Greek Dark Ages were, especially initially, pretty dark. Did Mycenaean culture persist in some areas? And if so, in what form? There is some limited evidence for cultural continuity after the initial period of destruction in some regions. And this is actually best known on Crete, where occupation at Knossos, people living at Knossos, continued into the 10th century BC. This continuity, persistence, is probably due in at least some degree to Crete's relative isolation at the time. What was the nature of Greek political and social life over the next 400 years during the Dark Ages? There seems to have been a general dissolution of state-level political structures during this period. Architecture and artifacts like ceramics become far more regionally variable. Political affiliations became more local and community-based, probably with control by strongmen and chiefs in particular areas. In the Eastern Mediterranean, then, we can see evidence for a variety of themes important to archaeologists studying state formation. First, what seems to be real differences in the investment of states in military activities, with less evidence of such activity in Minoan Crete than in surrounding states. The implications here are that we need not necessarily believe that conquest and violent predatory expansion is a necessary element in state formation everywhere in the world, or in the runnings of states everywhere in the world. Paradoxically as well, though, we see the effects of natural catastrophes, invasion, war, and cultural collapse on sophisticated state-level societies. These are both themes that we'll refer to during later lectures. In my next lecture, I'm going to move far to the east. We're moving away from the Eastern Mediterranean. We're moving away from the Near East as a whole, far to the east to Pakistan and its borders with India, to look at the very different trajectories towards statehood and civilization that we see in this region, a region not well known to the general public, but fascinating nonetheless, in the Indus Valley. Thank you.